It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex Lindsay are here, and we have, I think, probably nailed down all the details of Apple's next announcement, including a really big story from Mark Gurman at Bloomberg about Macintosh computers. We'll also talk about problems with the new MacBooks and why you shouldn't worry if your Apple Watch delaminates. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Week.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 624, recorded Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. Cake time is over. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/MacBreak and using the promo code MacBreak at checkout. And by LastPass, secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where you get together with the Mac Minds, making the Mac Minds, to talk about Mac news. And there's Mac Mini News! It's so exciting! Renee Ritchie is here from imore.com. And the Vector Podcast. Hello, Rennie.
Jazz hands, Leo.
Jazz hands for the excitement. Also here, Alex Lindsay. He's probably the most excited from pixelcore.com.
Big smile.
And Andy Anatko from Anatko.com and WGBH Public Radio in Boston. Also smiling. Yes. You're going to smile even wider when I read you. We'll get to the Mac news, and there is some in just a bit. But you're going to be even happier when I read you this. Mail from Gary Palmer, IT director at ForbiddenPlanet.com. On episode 622, Andy mentioned the Fantastic Four comics as a great jump-off issue for all comic fans. You joked about if you had a signed copy by Dan Slott, so I've sent you all a signed copy by Dan Slott. So I have one for you, I have one for you, I have one for you, and I have one for me. So thank you, Gary. We really appreciate those.
That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Dan. We'll get this in the mail to you, Renee. I know you'll be very excited to get that.
Dan is awesome. I interviewed him after talking a while with him, and he is exactly the sort of person you want writing high-profile comics. This is sometimes you have writers who are like, clearly, I want to be tapped to write screenplays for somebody at some point with a notice I get from comics. And then you get some writers who are like, nope, I love comics. All the stories I come up with are comic stories, and I write them as comic stories. And yeah, I love comics without being a fanboy of comics. Without being able to turn off the fanboy part of my brain while I'm being a writer of comics.
Got a shipment from South Africa of Droivors. Bull and Cleaver came through. And if I could feed this to you through the screen, Renee, I would do it.
You might lose an arm, Laporte.
But we'll leave this to... And some biltong, which, by the way, I agree. I really like the biltong.
Bayaleka. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll keep that. And for dessert, I'm not done yet.
There's more.
One of our chatters, legendary chatter in the chat room, is Jersey Fudge, which is, by the way, the Isle of Jersey. In the Channel Islands, where Apple stores its money. And he has brought us I'm hoping it's not
Apple's
money.
They store it in fudge.
It's
fudge futures.
Some Jersey cream fudge. Well, so after your Droivors and your biltong, have dessert. He also brought me a snow globe of one of the castles. I didn't realize this, but the Isle of Jersey has many castles on it. So there's a castle. Thank you. What else? I don't know. I think there's other things here, too. Somebody sent me this. I haven't opened it yet. I don't know if this is something you guys will appreciate or not.
Is it street legal?
Jonathan Wander said he found this poster and he thought I would enjoy it. It reads, "What do you mean my computer wants to kill me?
Bum, bum, bum.
Destroy your machines." Brought to you by Monstra. Monsters and Occupational Normalization Safety Training and Recovery Administration. You use your computer every day. You love your computational machine. It makes mundane tasks easier, helps you communicate with the world, and makes office organization a breeze. But did you know your computer will gain sentience? That it will begin to learn and act on its own? That it will grow tired of its human masters? That it will grow tired of you? That it will inevitably conspire with other computers and machines to kill you? This is not science fiction. This is science fact. You know, I think everybody should get this. Finally, it's time for second dessert, because this today is the second anniversary of our big move to the Twit East Side Studios. So we are celebrating 2 years in our new digs, which I guess we can't call our new digs anymore. So thank you. Thank you, Jared.
Wait a minute. Every time Alex is there, there's confections.
Yeah, I feel bad that you guys aren't here.
Sorry, guys. Not that sorry.
Eat for us, Alex. Eat for us.
And by the way, thank you to the fellow who sent me this poster. I should have thanked him. Jerry, do I have you to thank for this, or Lisa? Who? You?
Debbie.
Thank you, Debbie. And thanks to Jonathan Wander for sending along this. He says, I've been an original fan since the Screensavers. Oh, he says a lot of nice things, which I'm not going to mention. Cannot thank you enough for all of your shows. So we have lovely fans, lovely audience members, and lovely Droivars and cake
for so all jealous. Of
you. We will. I know Harrison and Ava want some cake. No, Ava may not. Do you not eat cake either? So we'll, and Sam's here. We got lots, Lucia, and we're going to have cake later. So stay tuned. Now we could talk about Mark Gurman's latest. Man, this guy is amazing. Really, we are getting close to an Apple event, and yes. I feel like all the chickens are coming home to roost.
Sort of.
So let me do the new rumor, and then we'll kind of get back. We'll circle back to all the other stuff, including, I think, very credible rumors about the shipping dates for the iPads and or at least the iPhones. According to people familiar with the matter, there will be a new laptop. It will look like, according to Gurman, the current MacBook Air, but will have thinner bezels, 13-inch display, higher resolution Retina. That's what really the MacBook needs more than anything else. Apple spokesman declined to comment. And I know you'll be really jazz hands about this, Alex Lindsay, a new pro-level Mac Mini. Apple hasn't upgraded the Mac Mini in 4 years.
That's the perfect thing to do. I mean, I think that really pros are the ones that are using it. You're not using, I think a lot of us, you were using Mac Minis early on to basically be a faster Apple TV. I don't think we really need that right now. And I think that probably if they looked at who was using it, it's a lot of pros that like to have compact rack mountable, computers. And I think that, and I have so many of these, and we just use them for lots of little bits and pieces, but if they were more powerful, if they had a discrete graphics processor, if they had, obviously USB-C, then you could put a very discrete, graphics processor on the back. So there's a lot of things that would be great with a pro level Mac Mini. I think that, I don't think the pros are also that attached to the price. I mean, they obviously don't want it to be too expensive, but I think that they could probably go to much less. And they're, they understand the value of the Mac Mini. I think that even if they're top end, topped out at $1,500 or $2,000, I think that people would still get it because it's the form factor that really makes a difference.
I love it that shares in the Lenovo group slid 2.8% on the news that Apple was going to release a new MacBook Air.
And that's the thing. Ben Behrend talked about this 3 months ago, I think, when the rumors first came out, that there was so much space being left in the PC market because Apple just didn't have an updated sub $1,000 offering, and it was their space to lose because they basically invented the Ultrabook. And they really needed to get back in that game.
Yes.
And I think it creates kind of a nice blend between the upper end iPad and the lower end. There's a little bit of crossover there where you can kind of make a decision that all the prices are about the same. That's good.
Yeah. But once again, we're running into the observation that every single time they take the Volks computers in the Mac line, suddenly gets the word pro ahead of it. which gives license to say, well, how about we start at $1,000 now instead of starting at $500? And, well, what if we add these features that are not going to be significant to people who just simply want to add a Mac to their desktop? It's I don't know if I want to call it concerning, but a continuing data point in the theory that Apple is transitioning the Macs away from consumers exclusively and making it into a pro line of desktops and trying to get people who would come into an Apple store to buy a sub-$1,000 MacBook Air or a sub-$800 Mac of any kind, basically steering them towards getting an iOS device instead. So we'll see how that turns out. We also don't want them to forget about what makes the Mac Mini so practical and so desirable, that it is a rounded square that's flat and easy to put places, and we don't want a pyramid that you can't put something on top of. I don't care how excited you are about this new shape. I don't care about this new convection current.
Well, let's be clear.
There's
a new shape, right?
I just don't want you to confuse people.
So there's Andy's flight of fancy. There's no pyramid shaped Mac Mini.
All I'm saying is that all we know is that there's a new. Excuse me. The rumor that he is reporting is simply that it's going to be more pro oriented,
right.
And this might. Excuse me. This gets me to anticipate the possibility, at least, that Apple's going to give us another Quaker Oats box and not give us something that is practical and really, really suitable for consumers.
God, I hope not. This is the only data point in here is for this year's model. Everything else is just words. For this year's model, Apple is focusing primarily on, and we're talking about the Mini, these pro users. New storage and processor options are likely to make it more expensive. That's the only data point. Go ahead, Renee.
I heard about this back in June, that Apple was actively working on the Mac Mini again. I didn't have a timeline, and I didn't hear anything about it being pro-centric. And I think Ming-Chi Kuo wrote about it in July, and I don't think he included anything about it being pro-focused. It could be that Mark has awesome sources, so it could just be that he knows better about it. Or it could just be that, similar to other Apple products, there will be an entry-level version, and then there will be a version that goes up to 32 gigabytes of RAM, 2 terabytes, or even 4 terabytes of storage if you really need it. And when you start getting into 2 terabytes and 4 terabytes of storage, those prices spike. But not everybody, not even most people, need those options. So it could be that we're getting a very, I'm not going to say vanilla, but we could be getting a very catch-up Mac Mini release, Thunderbolt 3, like Alex mentioned, so you can hang eGPUs off the back and be super happy with those things. The Mac Mini does not sell well. I mean, that's I think everybody knows that by now. It is the worst selling, I think, the worst selling Mac. The laptops sell the best, and then the iMac, and then it's probably a battle between the really outdated Mac Pro and the really outdated Mac Mini, which might be why they don't sell so well. But pros do love them, and if Apple is seeing that the market really, because Apple took away a lot of the pro options last time, took away the 4 cores, took away the double drive option, that could have been a mistake. And if they're correcting for that and we do get a range, I think that would be excellent.
The Mini, when it was announced, was pitched as a way for PC users to sample Macintosh. That you would take
bring your own keyboard, mouse. And,
yeah, you would take your tower case. You would unplug it, the keyboard, mouse, and monitor, put the Mini on top of it, plug it in there, and you could use a Mac. And I think it was a pitch to developers. Is that completely gone by the wayside?
I don't know. I think it's important to give, again, if they really want to support the Mac as a platform and not as part of just simply a larger business strategy, they have to acknowledge that I've got in front of me a really nice display that I'm very happy with that I paid $400 for. I don't want to have to be forced to buy a $900 panel that I don't need or want if I want to get a Mac on my desktop. And it's important that Apple nurture the Mac as a platform, which is something that I don't think they're doing. If the Mac Mini is indeed such a bad selling piece of hardware, then I don't think we go to the idea that, well, I don't think we jump to the conclusion that people don't want inexpensive Macs. We go to the conclusion that maybe the reason why the school system is so underperforming is because you're taking money away from it, and you're not giving it any resources, and you're not helping it to nurture. You have to basically tell people that the Mac Mini exists. You have to basically keep making it better and better and better every single year. If Apple decided to make, I still have this fantasy of a Apple TV sized Mac Mini that goes for way under $500 that would be very capable of running most of the Mac apps that people kind of want, but would be so inexpensive that people would just, and be so Apple-y in reliability and ease of setup, that people would just simply say, I need a computer for the living room, or I need a computer for the house. We're not getting the job done with just issuing laptops to everybody. That would be such an interesting and creative product. You don't sell Mac Minis by telling people that we're not interested in updating it. We're not interested in making it useful for 2018. Please buy a Mac Pro instead. That's what I think is causing the failure of the Mac Mini.
Here's a $64,000 question. When?
October.
Not next month.
No. And then they're not going to get anything in the way of the phone.
How about iPad?
Hold on one second. There's two Apples, and it's hard to predict which one will show up at any given time. There's the Apple that thinks, and they've done this. They've done a couple times where there's only been a September event, and basically Tim Cook says, clear my skies. And nobody wants to have to ramp up for two events. They have a lot of other stuff to do, and they put everything together. And you just get product after product after product until you're almost exhausted. And it's amazing, but it's terrible. And then there's the Apple that, like Alex said, doesn't want to get anything else in the way of the new iPhone. Although this year it's an update. It's not a radical new redesign. And then you have the iPhone and iPad in September and the Macs in October. If there's no – I mean, there's enough new products that maybe the Macs could carry their own event. But it would be hard because there's no radical redesign aside from the MacBook Air. There's no – I don't believe the new iMac is ready yet.
I wouldn't be surprised either way. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do an event at all. I tell you why I would be.
The Mini, no. But there has been such a long time between the last Air and this Air.
When was the last time they did, though?
But I feel like for the exactly reasons that we just discussed, Apple will want to tell the world the Ultrabook is back. You don't have to buy a Lenovo. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that, and remember, Mojave is a big deal for Apple, too, and that's going to come out presumably day and date with these.
Now they're sort of trapped because the operating systems work so much together. They need to have the features ready on both.
That's why I think it's going to be one event. That's why I do think it's going to all be at once. It's funny. I have pretty good reason to believe that Apple, like any company that has a massive success, with the success of the iPhone, that the people in charge of the iPhone have become a dominant force within the company, and they have a lot of weight, and they can affect other divisions with their needs and wants. This happened at Microsoft. It actually was a very bad thing for Microsoft. We have these fiefdoms. I believe that that's what's happened at this point.
It's more like the iPhone has to absolutely ship on time every year, and everything else has to work around that.
Yes. And
any other product doesn't have to, but if iPhone didn't, it would be a calamity.
And I think that to some degree, the iMac and the Mac in general is hampered by the power that the iPhone division now wields, that they can say to Macintosh, no, don't do that. That's ours.
I agree and disagree. I don't think it's the iPhone division. I think it's iOS, and it's not a division. It's the culture of the company. I think that they see their primary outreach in hardware as being iOS. That's their creative passion. That's where they feel as though they can move the needle as much as possible. That's certainly where they think that most of the money that they can make is going to come from. I think that they don't see the need for what they consider to be a redundant operating system, for what they consider to be redundant hardware. What can an iOS device not do? Well, that's now what the Mac is going to have to handle from now on. So I don't think that it's so much as, again, here's this one division that's exerting control. I think that this is the one machine, this one organism called Apple, deciding that here's our path forward, and it's for hardware, and it really is going to be iOS.
And services Apple and Mac OS. Apple used to be more horizontal. I think it's less horizontal than it used to be.
Well, no, but I think it's less intentional and more consequential, because like the Mac team is just smaller, and they have a lot of things to work on. And also, when you have people who want to work at Apple, they don't want to work on the oldest product. They want to work on Titan or ROS or something. So you have to get those. Like, it's really hard to get engineers. There's a real lack of availability of engineers. And then getting those best and brightest sometimes means letting them work on what they want to work on. And that's not even iPhone anymore. So we're going to start seeing that shift, I think, as we go forward.
And I think that, more companies should also think about, their primary, what's making the most money for the company. And obviously, you don't want to be distracted by that. But at the same time, I mean, you don't want to lose sight of what's going to be the next thing for the company. But at the same time, you do have to stay very, very focused on what is generating revenue for us today and making sure that is a success. Then it lets you do everything else. And so I think that Apple is, I think, rightly so, very focused on the thing that is, 80% of the revenue?
I think 80% of revenue is the hazard of having a successful product is that companies do that. But I think you can demonstrably show that was never the way Steve ran the company. That he wasn't concerned about what was the most profitable. He wanted to do what was going to make the biggest difference.
Off Mac, the finished iPhone several times.
And he also didn't have the luxury of having anything as successful as the iPhone.
Right.
But Macintosh was a flop. Lisa was a flop. That didn't stop him from making Macintosh.
Oh,
and
I don't think
fired him over Macintosh.
But I'd say that he was a different person before the firing and after the firing. Like he was all over the place and had a lot of things that he wanted to do before the firing. After the firing, he had laser focus on we're gonna do this one thing. We're gonna move this one thing down the path. So I think that laser focus still exists there. This is the important thing. And the reality is these other businesses. I mean, they still have hundreds of engineers working on Titan. They have hundreds. They have hundreds of engineers working on their online. On their services. So they're still. I mean, they have revenue or they have R&D the size of many other companies. So they're still pushing way down that path. But I think that. I think that the one thing is they kind of follow through on most of those things, or at least the ones we see publicly. I think we see a little bit of ADD with some of the other companies in their sphere of
we're going to do notorious for
of just everything, and not following through. If you think about, where, G Plus would have been today when Facebook's having trouble, they probably would have done better.
Right.
As another option, but, they gave up pretty quick.
So we're going to get to the iPhone announcement because I think we also have now enough detail and we're close enough to the event that I think we can pretty much tell everybody what's going to happen. This Macintosh news kind of threw a monkey wrench into that, but we'll figure that out in a little bit. But I wouldn't mind a little blue sky. Now, understand this is completely blue sky at this point about what we'd like to see the next MacBook Air look like and the next Mac Mini look like. Let me start with Alex, because I know with the Mini, there's things that you want.
I mean, I just want it to be faster. I don't need it faster and better graphics processor. So, for instance, we can't use Mac Minis if we want to use – we don't use them for like something like Skype or Hangouts or other things like that because their graphics processor isn't fast enough to do full screen from a web page. It just can't render it at full frame rate. So, having something a little bit faster for us, for what we use, speed is all I care about. And then possibly, the USB-C is obviously in the back so that we could do Thunderbolt 3. I don't mean USB-C, but the Thunderbolt 3 connection so that we could really soup one up if we wanted to. But outside of that, I don't really have any, needs for it to change. I think that the form factor works great. I mean, I'd love to, see something that was halfway in between, but I think that being able to put two Mac Minis in one rack unit, my only concern would be, man, if they get out of that form factor, it'll be a disaster for us. I mean, if they make it a little bit taller or a little bit wider, there's a lot of people that are racking these Mac Minis that will be, everybody's on 19 inches wide and an inch and a half wide. There's a certain size that we need everything to fit into. And right now the Mac Mini fits into it really well. They could easily screw that up if they change it. I don't think Apple will. I think that we'll see that there. As far as the Air, it's not really a space that
I want to ask you about that one. Renee, you were the one who said that Apple got screwed up by Intel, which had promised a 10 nanometer processor this year and now can't deliver till next year. And that might have pushed back some of these announcements, given that there won't be a 10 nanometer. Be nice to have a ninth generation or a 10th generation processor.
I think it's like partially Intel's fault because Intel really dropped the ball on process advancement. Like they're 2 years and counting behind on their roadmap.
I'm sure that's why Apple was holding on to the MacBook Air, thinking, oh, we're going to get the 10 nanometer part. It'll be low power. I mean, low power usage, but high speed. It'll be great for a mobile device. And they didn't get it.
I think that's part of it too, but I think also Apple made a series of wrong bets, like the wrong bet they made on the Mac Pro. Now they're doing the modular Mac Pro.
Right.
And I think the MacBook, maybe they anticipated that dropping down and replacing the Air the way the Air replaced the previous MacBook. And just that computer remains expensive to make and not very flexible because it only has that one port. So, and you know, the MacBook Pro famous already. I don't have to regurgitate all that. But it seems like over the last year or so, they're trying to fix the Mac line as much as they can. And I think that is, you know, no longer pushing off, or if you have to get the iMac Pro out, we can't work on the Mac Mini at the same time. So they're finally making sure they get everything out in a timely fashion. The MacBook Air is the most interesting to me because if you take what we think we know about it, 13-inch screen, smaller bezels, that starts to become basically like a 12-inch MacBook. And then where's the place of the 12-inch MacBook when the MacBook Air is almost as light? It's got a Retina display. It's probably going to have more I/O. It's going to have, instead of the Core M platform, which Intel calls I now, but it's really not I, and nobody is fooled by that Intel. It'll have proper core processors in it. I just don't know what the value prop is for the MacBook anymore, or for the two-port MacBook Pro maybe. So to me, it's like, I think we have a fairly good, well, we're guessing a lot about what the new MacBook Air will be, but I think it will radically change how Apple has to look at its entire MacBook lineup.
Do you think it'll be a pro-ish or it'll be a consumer-ish?
No, I mean, there's two rumors. One is that it's going to be higher end, and I don't think that's good because they have all the higher end laptops they need.
Right.
They really need something at that $800, $900 price point because that's what they've been, you know, annoying for the last few years.
Do they, though? I mean, could they leave that out?
No, it's MacBook Air was one of their best-selling computers, and also because they haven't been updating it, it has left such an Windows laptops are famously do not make a profit. They were run at razor-thin margins. They competed on price. Loyalty was to price, not to brand, and they were willing to take a slaughtering in terms of their profit margins to just be on the market. And without a good MacBook Air competitor, those companies are learning what it's like to make money, and that's not a strategic advantage for Apple. Just being out of that market is detriment to Apple.
Yeah.
So being back in there, I think, is hugely important to them and to us.
Yeah, I think Apple has a big problem right now where I don't see the majority of people who have $1,300 to spend on a laptop. Most of them are saying, would love to get good hardware for $600. I suppose I can go as high as $800 and plus tax. But right now, unfortunately, I can't give those people a good argument for spending an extra $200 or $300 for a MacBook Air. It's like, what are you? Windows 10 is really, really good. Not only that, but the hardware is elegant. It's advanced. It really leaves MacBook Airs, even in the dust, forget about it just being having a low resolution screen. It just looks like a visitor from the past when you put it next to any Dell or HP or even a Google Chromebook, the higher end ones that cost $700 or $800. I need the ability to tell people, if you're not looking for the luxury or the high end price level, here is a good thing to look at, and it's got an Apple logo on it. And I don't think Apple has been able to make that argument for quite some time. And it's, again, it's not just the price point, it really is the idea of innovation. What does a MacBook Air do? And I'll include current MacBooks, and I'll include models that are coming out in the next couple of months. What does this do beyond giving us really important things like longer battery life and maybe a higher quality screen? What does it do to differentiate it from any laptop from 5, 6, 7 years ago? And it's nice that it's lighter, it's nice that it has longer battery life, but what makes me think that the person who designed this is aware of how people use the broad canopy of software, services, and hardware in 2018? Again, I'm not seeing that in Apple Macintosh laptops right now, and that's something they really need to do. So price, and also show me that you're not just getting yourself chasing your own tail by, hey, look, we put a micro thin screen up the top that kind of works but is mostly optional for total use, and we're calling that innovation. I'm saying convince me that you're interested in the Mac as a platform. Convince me you're excited in the Mac as a platform, as opposed to simply saying we are monitoring the level of sales. We will put only as much money, budget, employee power and effort into this as we can to maintain price numbers, but we don't want to distract this company away from its wonderful future in iOS and services, which is the message that I'm getting from Apple right now.
I do think that Apple looks at the Mac OS as legacy. I mean, I think that I don't think I've ever said that.
It's in a museum, though.
But it's
not. It's in the Apple Museum.
It is. It is. But I think
it's not exactly on the front doorstep. It's kind of in the back in a glass case. I think Apple is. Here's what I think Apple's saying. All right, we got to make the Mac because you need to develop for the iOS platform on the Mac. Let's say the Mac. People who love the Mac are pros. They're Alex Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Let's make pro versions of our stuff. We don't need that bottom end market. It's low margin market. We don't need it. We can let people buy Windows, get really unhappy with their $600 window device, because then they'll buy an iPad. I think Apple's going to abandon that market. I don't understand even why they're doing a MacBook Air, to be honest with you. They've got a
people like the really thin
nice
that,
pro
that,
line.
That super thin.
Okay, so
I have people in the company I'll give them a Retina, but they don't want the Retina. They want the
right.
They want the really thin one because they're throwing it in their purse or they're throwing
but
it in their backpack.
But there's no reason to say it's got to be $900 unless you want education. No. But don't they want education to buy iPads?
Yeah. Yep.
Whereas we used to think of the MacBook Air the way we used to think of the original MacBook nothing from 5 or 6 years ago, this is the entry level. Isn't it nice that the least expensive MacBook is also so thin and so lovely and so sexy? Now it really is. Now the people who have $2,000 to spend on a MacBook Pro will also let you spend $1,300 on, as Alex said, something that's so light that you could really throw it in any bag and never be without it, and also look like a badass at whatever conference room table that you were opening up your nice little tiny little sheaf of paper sized computer at.
But so I think
Apple wants the entry level to be iOS.
Yeah, I think that the iPad is still better than the other tablets, and I think that it forces companies to play on a field that they're not as good at. Apple.
Yeah, look at what Windows done with tablets. I mean, it really hasn't been a raging success.
No, I think that the problem is that the at that price point, the iPad is doing, you know, it's a really great solution, and I think Apple looks at that as the future. And admittedly, as I continue to test it by trying to force myself to use the iPad more. I am getting to a point where it is, you know, I'm leaning more and more. More of my day is being spent. Like, I don't take when I'm in the office, I don't take my laptop home anymore. You know, like, I have an iMac that if I have to go to it, but what my portable thing is now my iPad that I, you know, I'm now able to do most of those things, you know, there. And I can see that as they keep on adding those features to iOS, you know, I think we're all, and I think, of course, they're looking at a roadmap that is 3, 4, 5 years out of
make
where
the
they're
case.
Developing those things.
And make I just the case. Who's willing to make the case that strategically Apple has to have a sub $1,000 laptop?
Because if you first, you have to be interested in it. And number two, the thing is.
But what is the economic reason for them as a business to make this computer?
For people to get into coding at an affordable and easy to do level, which they can't do with iOS devices yet.
Yeah, but they have Swift Playgrounds.
No, well,
but they can't make apps.
Yeah,
yet. I think we're 1 WWDC or 2 WWDCs away before we're coding on an iPad.
But we're not there yet.
People are.
We're not there yet. Yep. So that would be one case. So if you want to get kids in school to code, and you definitely want to get them to code on a Mac right now. Right.
New to the platform, because so many people who switched over from developing web and developing other, you know, Windows, they bought a Mac Mini because it was the easiest way to get into it.
Right.
Well, I think the main reason is that computing is still the paradigm of you've got a screen, you've got a keyboard, you've got a pointing device. And that is not necessarily attached to the keyboard. And the iPad only has one of those three things. That, again, having an iPad as your only computing device that doesn't work really well. It's awesome if you happen to have a
Apple
laptop or
that?
Desktop someplace else. I think they know that. I think that they think that this is they're in a
so
wonderful
that whole
position
ad that, about what's a PC. They knew better.
Well, here's the thing:
here's my about to say though that Apple is in a unique position where they are the only people who make Mac compatible hardware. If they stop addressing the consumer market. No, they're basically asking everybody to drop all the software they're using, drop all the skills they're using and switch to Windows, which is something they probably are not going to do.
Same thing with
iOS devices. So I'm saying that this would be a less for them to abandon the consumer market for Mac devices is not as risky as Dell or HP, because there are a million people business who are willing to jump on that kind of a mistake. With Apple, they can simply say they can trust that because of the relationship and with that a lot of their customers have with their company, that again they've had a wonderful experience with this MacBook, and they feel as though that and this consumer might feel as though I can transition very nicely to an iPad Pro as instead of coming back for the $900 version of a MacBook that's no longer there in the store. If they didn't have that sort of opportunity, this would be a disastrous choice. It's hard for me to say that there is to know for a fact what the business strategy, what the business case to be made for continuing sales of consumer grade Macs are, unless you feel as though this is an ecosystem and this is a platform that is worthy of evolution. You have to not just make inexpensive machines, you have to continue to evolve things forward. And like I said, that's not something that seems to be very attractive to Apple at this moment.
Yeah, I think you sold me. Both you and Renee sold me. The clear case is that you don't want somebody to get their first computing experience on another platform because they'll never come back.
Yeah, it's the opposite of a halo effect. Yeah, it's a horn effect.
Yeah, and starting with an iPad doesn't make that easy transition to Macintosh. So if you want to sell Pro units, there's no way to sell Pro only. You have to have an entry level unit to get people into that cycle. That makes sense.
It's in one sentence, there's a difference between a product and a platform. I think that they're moving Mac towards being a product and stopping it to be a platform.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Now I'm
just I'll be as brief as I can. I'm not holding up the Google's Pixelbook as like the ultimate of anything, but I'm just holding up as an example of what you do when you have a company that is really, really excited about a platform and moving things forward. Right now you have an amazingly versatile device that may not be that we started off thinking about as here is a laptop that only runs a browser. By this time next year, or even by the end of the year, we're going to have an $800 laptop that will give you all the advantages of running Chrome OS. So the simplicity, the not having to fuss with system or apps, the ability to make sure everything is backed up in the cloud, the speed, the lightweightness, but also when you have to run Photoshop, you basically soft boot into Windows 10, and now you have a Windows 10 notebook. Or Chrome is working just great for you, but it would be nice if you could take this app from your phone and also use it. It will also they're building this thing that will dual boot into Windows 10. You can run a lot of, but not most Android apps on it as well, alongside Chrome OS. And you can also, if you get a Debian Linux app package, you know, with all the great UI and all that sort of stuff, all you have to do is download it and double click on it to install it and launch it on this thing. And that's to say nothing about having a touchscreen alternate interface, having to have like a nice little hinge on it, all that cool stuff. I'm not holding up this device as the ultimate what Apple should be making, but I'm saying, whereas Google is making and Windows makers are making computers that are as exciting as that, Apple is saying, we've given you a tiny little OLED screen on our $2,000 version of this that doesn't really do anything that hasn't been done on our PowerBooks and MacBooks for the past 10 or 15 years, but it's still nice, isn't it?
So as an additional data point on this 13-inch, I'm wondering whether the MacBook versus the – whether it'll be called a MacBook Air or not, I don't know. It sounds like this story from Digitimes sounds like this may be evidence in one direction. They say that Apple was working on a new MacBook, entry-level MacBook, but when Intel missed its ship deadline for the 10-nanometer chip and said it won't be out till the second half of next year – they changed the design to use the larger 14-nanometer Kaby Lake processor, which meant it had to be bigger and more expensive, $1,200. So does that make sense, Renee? Does that fit with your picture? And then what happens to the MacBook versus the MacBook Air? Will they still do a MacBook Air, MacBook?
Yeah, that's why I think Apple has to really figure out what it wants to say with its laptops. And again, it's hard to tell when there's rumors that it's really going to be under $100. But it could be the entry level one is $999, and then if you want one with an i7 instead of an i5, it's $1,200.
Right.
You know, double the memory, double the storage.
If you don't want 4 gigs of RAM, you're going to spend more. You know, that's what Microsoft does to a T. They put out a really kind of low end, crappy device, and then for $150 more, you can get a decent device.
Apple does the same thing, and that's it's basic marketing. What you always want to do, it's the opposite of airlines, who make you miserable, and then you have to fight your way out of it. Is you give people very easy to swallow chunks, like you can get double for just this, and you're like, for $100. That's what, then I can double this for another $100,
right.
And they don't realize how much they're spending because it just sounds so wonderful what they're getting.
Right. So we don't really know whether there'll be a MacBook and MacBook Air, or if this is the new one-size-fits-all MacBook, but it's a little bit bigger.
Yeah, the MacBook now is sort of an executive. I want the lightest absolute Mac that I can fly with. I want basically an iPad, and I'm in MacBook's clothing.
Lisa loved her MacBook, but now she's saying it's a little too slow. There's exactly that example.
Yeah.
She's the CEO. She doesn't need huge horsepower. She wants light, convenient. But it has to have sufficient horsepower.
Right.
And that processor
I'm not a fan of the Core M series at all.
It's just really laggy. And she's finally gotten tired of it. She came close to buying the new MacBook Pro, but it was too big. So she's the sweet spot for that market.
And there are people who develop on the M7, and they're fine with it.
They're patient people.
I look at that, and then I look at what Apple can do with an A11, and I just weep.
Yeah.
Because the A11 can do three streams of 4K, and the MacBook can't do it.
We should point that out. This is all interim. In fact, you have a good article on ARM, the future of ARM. Let's take a break, and let's talk a little bit about that. And I do want to get to kind of nailing down what's going to happen on September 12th.
Sure.
But, and why I say September 12th.
Mm-hmm.
But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. Time flies, doesn't it? Except... you don't want time to, what is it Einstein said? He said, it's all relative. When you're talking to a pretty girl, it goes very fast. When you're sitting on a stove, it goes very slow. I don't think he really said that, but that's the gist of it. That's relativity in a nutshell. When you're looking at a house and you want to buy a house and you feel that clock ticking because you know you're going to get a loan and that interest rates are going up, And a 1 month, a 1 week, a 1 day delay could cost you tens of thousands of dollars more. It adds to the anxiety. You're sitting on a stove. MacBreak is proud to talk about our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, because they're the talking to a pretty girl guys. But I'm sure they don't want me to say that. But that's the other side. They're the ones, how can I get myself out of this, kids? They're the ones where time flies because you're having fun. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans makes it easy. They take the anxiety out of buying a house. Here's how they do it. They call it the power buying process. Of course, we've talked about Rocket Mortgage before. You can do it all online, which by itself makes this a lot easier. You can do it on your phone. It's fast. When you go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak, answer a few questions. They will partner with their trusted financial institutions, with your permission, get the information they need. That's step one. Now, within 24 hours, they're going to verify income, assets, and credit and give you the next step, which is verified approval. And that's basically, that means you have the strength of a cash buyer. You got the money. And when you go and you make an offer on a house, you've got that letter that says they're approved. That's awesome. Once you get that, you qualify for Rate Shield approval. This is all new and exclusive, and it has to do with the fact that interest rates are starting to tick up now. They will lock your interest rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now you got time. Because I'll tell you, when you're looking for a house, you don't want to be rushed into it. You want to be able to get the right house. And if it takes you up to 3 months, that's fine because your interest rate stays the same. Actually, if rates go down, your rate will drop. Either way, you win. They just won't go up. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender, the great folks at Rocket Mortgage. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Take the anxiety out of searching for a new home. Rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. All right. So here's the deal. We've already did some of this math. No invitations have gone out, right, Renee?
Nope.
Typically, what, a week to 2 weeks? It's been long. They've given you more lead time lately.
I don't feel like it's been appreciably more.
It's still an expensive ticket, however you look at it.
Yeah.
So it's completely conceivable Apple could be planning an event in September, and we wouldn't know about it yet.
Yes.
Especially because they're doing it at the campus, so we, no one knows. What
presumably, yeah.
Yeah, they don't have to book anything. So here's the thinking. We went through this once before Labor Day, September 3rd. They're not going to do it before Labor Day, so they're going to do it. Typically, they don't want to do it the day after a three-day weekend. Alex, you told me this because they don't want people to go crazy planning for a keynote.
Right.
Over a long weekend. So it would be September 11th. Wait a minute. That's a bad day. In fact, I didn't realize this, but in 2012, they had an event that would have been scheduled September 11th, and they moved it to September 12th the next day. They like doing Tuesdays, but given that circumstance.
And everybody likes doing Tuesdays, by the way. Like, Tuesday is the day that a lot of people do it because it gives you Monday to prepare for it, and then you're not working over the weekend, and it gives you the rest of the week to follow up and get the PR out before you go into the weekend. So that's why you see all your albums, all your movies, everything, movies for rental or whatever. Yeah. Tuesday is the day that you do all those launch cycles because it's that gives you Monday to prep and gives you the rest of the week to manage it.
So they can't do September 11th because it's September 11th. So September, they would do it on a Wednesday, September 12th of the following. But here's another data point. Pre-orders, according to some German carriers for the iPhone, 2018 iPhone, will begin September 14th.
Which would make sense.
That would be exactly what would happen if you had an event on September 12th,
right.
the Friday at midnight, right?
Yep.
And we've seen other information that deliveries are going to begin September 21st.
For all the usual dates.
Yeah. It's possible that all of these other people are doing the same calculation we are and saying, oh, it's September 12th. But it sounds to me like there's just a lot of data points kind of.
I called it the best and worst kept secret in tech because Apple doesn't tell anybody, but it does the same thing almost, year after year after year after year with very, very few exceptions. I would be surprised if it was September 11th, given that it's September 11th. I would not be shocked. I think September 12th is much more likely for the reasons you mentioned. Yeah. They have done an occasional Thursday. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but 12 just seems like the sweet spot for them, given everything that they've done to date.
Mac Rumors has the list of iPhone dates. And it really, after once it settled in, by 2012, it was in September.
Yeah.
Wednesday, September 12th in 2012, then September 10th, a Tuesday. The following year, 2014, September 9th, a Tuesday. 2015, it was Wednesday, September 9th. 2016, Wednesday, September 7th. Those probably were both to avoid Labor Day.
Yep.
And then last year, it was Tuesday, September 12th. So a Wednesday, September 12th this year is...
Also, previously, they used other facilities who wouldn't let them in over Labor Day weekend. So
right.
They couldn't really...
That's another issue. Yeah. But now... That's true that being...
It's so much more sane. For Apple to now have their own theater because now... they don't have to, there's no load in 3 days before or 5 days before or whatever. They're able to work on this.
You forget something and you say, let me go to my office.
They can rehearse. They can rehearse. Here's one of the big things they can do is they can rehearse in the theater all summer.
Without putting Tim Cook in a limousine.
But here's a section we want to work on. They're no longer, going to something that isn't the actual place that they're doing it. And they can make sure that the pipelines work and the audio works and the video is just right. And so it's a huge... bump up for them and the presentations will be cleaner.
You think that they have that when they were building the everything they're going to be doing for that theater, they also built in a rehearsal space just like regular theaters will
have
like
a rehearsal space.
A taped up, here is where all the marks are for the stage, here's where we're going to be putting everything without having to tie up this other theater space.
Yeah, they definitely have rehearsal spaces that are some I've never seen them, but I've heard about them from people who have presented that there is rehearsal spaces in Cupertino that are Apple's, where they go to rehearse before events.
But not at the Steve Jobs Theater, maybe inside the ring.
It's somewhere. Yeah, it's not inside the ring. There's ones that are in the offices, and as again, I've never seen them myself. But I've known people that have gone to they're on the keynote you know, they're an external vendor on the keynote, and they get to go to some secret building that they work on. But I think that the big advantage that Apple has by having it in the in the new theater is that they can really, when they get to that last little bit, probably now, you know, they're probably they can test a handful of things, you know, close off the facility and, you know, test it in the environment, make sure that it works, which means that it allows Apple to be much more aggressive. You know, so, you know, right now, a lot of what you do when you do an event is you're very conservative because it's what you could do. What can you do in 4 days, you know, or 5 days or 6 day load ins or whatever it is? You know, the more they rehearse at Graham Auditorium or at, you know, Yerba Buena, the more there's a chance that it'll get out. So now they have the ability to have it very top secret. And so I think that we may, I don't know if we'll see it on this one, but I think that those presentations could get more interesting because I think that technologically they can be a lot more aggressive because they have a lot more time to plan, prep, and test, you know. And so I think that we'll see better and better presentations from that theater.
Now, we can thank Kyrgyzstan for the following data point.
Good old Kyrgyzstan
and Kazakhstan and Armenia, Belarus, and Russia, they all require filings ahead of any encrypted devices to be sold. So yesterday, Apple filed 6 new Apple Watch model numbers with the Eurasian Economic Commission, A1977, 78, 75, 76, 2007, and 2008. This is all according to a French blog called Consomac. All of the models run watchOS 5. Will these be Series 4 watches?
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
Will they announce them September 12th?
They kind of have to.
If they can.
Because iPhone and Apple Watch are still paired products. Like, now that it's got LTE, it's still a shuttlecraft. Now that it has LTE, it's got minimal warp drive capability, but it still can't go too far from Starship iPhone. So keeping those things together and the software releases go together and all of that in tandem. And that's what they've done for the last 3 years, ever since the original.
Let me put it this way. How sad am I going to be that I bought a ceramic Series 3 watch?
How sad were you when you bought a ceramic Series 2 watch, Leo?
I don't buy any. Like, I have to admit that is the one thing that I definitely decided from version 1 is that I'm buying the cheapest cheap because the functionality is the same, and I know that I'm buying another one in a year.
Yeah.
And I do the best I can to take care of it. I think the first 2 or 3, I had like a big case around it, and I put a thing over the top, and now I just wear it, and it's fine. And it's I don't see any reason to buy the more expensive ones because you're just gonna, especially if you think you're going to upgrade. If you think you're going to stick with it, it's fine. But you know that this market is volatile. They're going to make a new one every year. I just think you get the cheapest one if you're the type of person that wants to keep up.
Yeah.
And
I think that Apple hasn't had any success with the edition level of watches.
No,
where they started off saying we're making a breakthrough into fashion. We're tapping into the timelessness of horology, not just simply gadget making. And then as they figured out the product, they said, no, people just want a stylish fitness watch that also receives notifications you can take phone calls on. And so really the sweet spot is still aluminum and stainless steel.
I guess what I'm really asking is how expensive is it going to be September 14th? How much is going to go on
all
their
money
card?
All the money, Leo.
All the money.
Because will we also have new iPads? Am I going to be buying, in other words, for Megan Maroney, my wife, and others in my family, new iPhones, Apple Watches, iPads, and MacBooks?
Potentially.
No, I think you're going to be buying those things also for Renee and Alex and me and my cousin who's...
No, I got a comic book for you and some cake. That's it.
Okay. That's good enough.
That's all you're getting. And we will put a piece of cake in the comic book box if you want.
Yay!
Is the comic bagged?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, in that case.
Sealed. One of those sealed in the bag.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool to see what the entry level watch is going to be, whether they find some room to drop the price even further or how powerful an earlier edition watch they decide to rebrand as the entry level $249 model.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the that was one of the most important steps I think they took with the Apple Watch, because now it's so hard to convince anybody with an iPhone to spend $250 on anything other than an Apple Watch. Because they're great fitness watches from $200 to $300, but it's such a unique product, and it's so uniquely wonderful when paired with an iPhone. It's hard to sell somebody a Garmin unless you can sell them on the super advanced training features of a Garmin device, or you can sell them on the fact that this costs half as much or it's even smaller.
It's also a case to be made that, which you kind of alluded to, Renee, that you really need iOS 12 and all the iOS 12 devices and Mojave, all the devices come out roughly simultaneously, right?
Sometimes it's worse than others. Like sometimes there's a continuity clipboard feature, for example, that if you don't have it on both, you just can't use it. And then it's really awkward. Other times it's just, you know, you want iCloud Message Sync or whatever to be working on both at the same time. But more and more of those operating systems are linked together. The Core OS team is just building things for everybody. And
how about new AirPods? It's been 2 years.
AirPower, right? Like, that's the big story. AirPower plus the inductive charging case plus maybe the waterproof AirPods, water resistant AirPods.
Have
there been any teardowns to see of the latest generation AirPods to see if they've done any redesigns to deal with like battery swelling issues or anything else? I haven't seen one, but it occurs to me that might be smart.
Okay. So it's going to be a big September.
It's expensive.
Expensive September 12th.
Start saving now.
Fortunately, I'll be in Monaco, so I can, play the tables.
You don't have tons of free cash, Leo.
Yeah, actually, I'll be in the middle of the ocean when the announcement's made. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to be able to watch it.
That's the only place you're safe.
So you know all the people who asked me last spring when I announced that we were going to be going away in September and said, well, but wait a minute, isn't that when the Apple event is? Yes.
Yes.
Now you know.
You kind of want to be off planet when Skynet goes active, just in case.
Exactly. Lisa, we cannot afford that third lamb. Taji and I have iPhones to buy.
Or even better yet, let's see. The self fulfilling prophecy is that like I'll only need to buy like 10 minutes worth of internet on this boat in order to go onto the Apple Store and buy this $1,000 new thing.
Happen. Yeah,
but then I will have spent $1,000 I'd budgeted for the new thing.
On the Wi-Fi. It's exactly what's gonna. You know, Andy and I have been on a cruise or two. You know what it's like. Okay, a couple of things we should ask then about iOS 12 beta 7.
So many betas.
Or is
every
it
day
8?
It feels like.
There's a new beta that just came out. And it's pretty stable. Still missing shortcuts, oddly enough. iOS 12 beta.
Shortcuts is never going to be bundled in. It's going to be like workflow.
Okay.
It's just going to replace the workflow app.
Well, that's what I thought would happen is that my workflow would get renamed, but it has yet to have happen.
No, when it releases, I believe that'll happen.
That'll be the release.
Yeah.
Anything new in Mojave we should be aware about? Somebody's saying the new Mojave has eliminated Back to My Mac.
That is the current rumor, and I'm sure Apple will put out a nice piece of paper saying how you can roll your own.
I use Back to My Mac. I like that. It's remote access for the Mac desktop.
I do too.
It's something that comes with Windows. Yeah.
Yep.
But there are third-party products, including some of our sponsors, that will let you do that.
And is there something that distinguishes it from, like, Apple Remote Desktop or from Back to My Mac?
It was just super lightweight and easy to use, and anybody could just basically turn it on.
I could still use Apple Remote Desktop. The Back to My Mac.
Just the idea that you open up your MacBook in a hotel room somewhere, and your shares from your home office or your music library from your home office just simply appear in the Finder as if by magic.
Oh, here
that
you
was
go.
Such a strong feature.
Here's the Apple note. Thank you, Scooter X. Prepare for changes to Back to My Mac. This is HT208922. Back to My Mac will not be available on Mac OS Mojave. This is from Apple. You can get ready now by learning about alternatives for file access, screen sharing, or remote desktop. iCloud Drive, that is not a replacement. Other Mac screen sharing, if you have multiple Mac screens, so you can still do screen sharing.
Yeah.
Manage your Mac remotely with Apple Remote Desktop, so that's still going to be there. So basically, this simple, easy thing is just going to be gone. Is it a security issue, you think?
It's old school. I think when you at some point they asked themselves what features were we trying to deliver with Back to My Mac, and they realized that iCloud sharing is so much better to simply have these important files shared into iCloud. That's not going to be a problem anymore. Screen sharing is a separate feature. We don't necessarily need to create it Back to My Mac. I just think that they realized that this was a feature that doesn't need to exist because it's being duplicated and in many cases done better by not referring to, we have the special feature that gets you access to shared features.
I wonder why they're not killing dashboard widgets.
Didn't they? Are they still there?
I didn't know that they were even there.
Are you sure they're still? I haven't seen them in a.
Yeah, I don't.
You don't think they're there? Enter mission control and switch to the dashboard space. Who's working on a Mac?
I am, but.
Go into mission control and switch to the dashboard space. Oh, you're on Mojave, probably. Well, you're not on Mojave, are you?
No, but I don't know.
I'm not on Mojave.
Do you know how to get into mission control?
I hate mission control.
Swipe up.
I'm in mission control, but I don't see any.
That's ICR. And one of the screens is not dashboard?
No, it's desktop one and desktop two.
Nope.
Oh. I could have sworn I saw it just the other day.
It could still be there, just none of us use it. So it's like Schrodinger's dashboard. No one knows if it's alive or dead.
Scooter X says I could swipe to the left and get dashboard. Scooter X says, yes, dashboard widgets are still in Mojave.
I don't know how to find them.
Yeah.
Throwboy, who's in our chat room, says you have to enable in the system preferences.
I love his pillows and his knowledge.
Did you see the new pillows?
I did. So good.
We'll make that our pick later in the show.
Okay.
So, yeah, you have to turn it on. But it's still there. They're not taking that out of Mojave because probably there's somebody in headquarters that uses it.
Can't spare an engineer to get rid of it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe by speaking about it, we're reminding Apple that it exists.
What? That's still in there? Winston, get in here.
Someone has the cushiest job at Apple ever which is to keep dashboard and widgets running fine. People stopped using it 3 years ago.
Are you still making those dashboard widgets? You never told me to stop.
Well, he takes a lot of long
Winston's
lunches.
Winston's office is on the roof.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a nice little picnic table out there. Apple Car. This is the craziest story that we're doing today. The Apple Car, according to Fast Company, actually, according to Ming-Chi Kuo, it's being quoted in Fast Company. Ming-Chi Kuo, I love you, Ming-Chi Kuo. The Apple Car will launch between 2023 and 2025.
There are absolutely no supply chain sources for Ming-Chi Kuo to exfiltrate information about Apple Car.
No. This is more the analyst note that, you know, you write to investors.
Yeah.
We expect that Apple Car, which will likely be launched in 2023 to 2025, will be the next star product. Well,
That's crazy.
That's just crazy talk.
Yeah.
In fact, the last we heard, Apple wasn't going to do a car.
They're doing a car, but I mean, this is something you tell investors who are panicked that the iPhone glory days are over.
Yeah. Keep buying.
Well, and again, I'm going to say this because it's far enough out. I still think that there is a play for Apple as you look at Apple Pay, and then you look at their products and you look at cars, that they could build, they're one of the only companies in the world when they release the car, of being able to build a closed loop of credit and, you know, of credit. Basically, that you are putting into an Apple saving, you know, basically an Apple bank that we put into, you know, use, you know, put our savings into, that is only using the money so that, to give money to other people who are buying Apple products. There's no company in the history of the world that's been able to do that. And it would be, and I just think there's a lot of people that'll be like, oh, I just, because Apple Pay is ready to basically, is it more and more and more, it could just step in the middle of all of that, you know, and it wouldn't have to be something they do overnight. It'd be stuff like being able to pay people. And right now, Apple's already kind of holding money in that account. You know, like you're, you know, when you, if I pay you over text, they're already, you know, hanging on to that. And what if that just, you know, that could be something that just slowly grew in feature sets, you know, but it is, when you think about how they increase value, you know, they're the only ones that are selling enough of that to do both things at the same time and the only ones with enough cash to pull it off.
You make it sound like we're like miners who are forced to like buy all of our food and clothes at the company store.
It's just an incredibly efficient financial loop. That's all. I mean, it's just it is amazing. Like if they do it, it'll be amazing.
You can switch to Windows, but of course we're going to demand the $11,000 that you owe us for software and services immediately.
Let's take a break. How did you sleep last night, my friends? I slept like a baby. Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses, And it's a fraction of the cost because they eliminated the middleman. No more mattress showrooms. The markup in a mattress showroom is about 100% or more. Instead, you buy it direct from the factory and you save. Caspers are made in the United States, obsessively engineered, by the way. Not just made, but they really spend some time testing and thinking. The original Casper mattress, which what I sleep on, combines the multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's breathable. I for some reason, I get hot at night. I need a mattress that keeps me cool, and this is it. It lets you regulate your temperature through the night, and we know science says that's important. You want to be a little cool at night. Mattresses from Casper last a long time. They provide comfort. They provide support. You can buy them online easily and, I should emphasize, risk-free. Casper knows that, you know, because they don't have the showroom, you got to try. Truthfully, you can't really try in 10 minutes in a showroom, but you can when you get a Casper. You get 100 days to try it risk-free. Free delivery, painless returns, every penny refunded. You don't have to lie down in a showroom. You can try it in your home. Free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental protection standards and are made in the U.S. of A. You're going to love your good night's sleep with Casper. Here's the deal. Get a Casper mattress today. You'll save $50 towards select mattresses when you go to casper.com/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. casper.com/MacBreak. The promo code is MacBreak. You're going to love it. casper.com/MacBreak. I want to mention a couple of issues that people are talking about with the new MacBook Pros. One I've actually experienced, the speaker crackling, but I only experienced it once. We were watching a Netflix movie. At the very end of the movie, for no apparent reason, Lisa and I were watching on the laptop. It started going crack, crack, real loud pop, crack, 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 crack. It was like, what's going on? I shut it down immediately. It was fine. But, and that hasn't bothered me since. And I figure, well, I don't know. Something weird happened. But there are a number of people saying that they have MacBook Pros with crackling speakers. This is a post on the MacBook Pro subreddit. A guy actually tried to figure it out. He uses Logic. And he makes it, that's a different one. He makes it music on his MacBook Pro. And he was able to pinpoint the crackling when there was a large dip in the CPU. Seconds after the dip in the CPU, the graphs returned to normal and the audio recovered. So these dips here that you see in voltage, in frequency, even in temperature and utilization, were to him correlated with the crackling. Have you guys heard any of this crackling or popping? I know you've heard the stories.
I have not experienced it, no, which is frustrating because you always want to try to troubleshoot stuff that your readers view.
It doesn't seem like you've created either.
The other interesting thing would be if it's happening with external sources, like if it's a headphone jack or...
So he uses an external... Let me see if I can read this. I believe he uses an external sound card. As a songwriter, musician, and audio engineer producer in college, I rely heavily on Apple Mac OS and Logic Pro 10 digital audio workstation software. Audio artifacts, severe stuttering, crackling, and delay. He was able to consistently reproduce it by playing a single track on the Logic built-in sampler, EXS24, for about a minute while simultaneously playing a QuickTime Player video. I thought I read that he was using a external. He says the High Sierra supplemental update did not completely fix all CPU-related issues. He believes this is one. Oh, wait a minute. The audio artifacts do not occur when using an external audio interface. At least his. He says his does not use Apple's driver. So here's a demonstration I'll play for you. If you're getting my audio, maybe I have to turn my audio on. Do you hear my audio? It's very low. Is it me? So watch the CPU. So this is the same sample. Single sample. It's not like he's overtaxing the processor. But he does have that QuickTime video with the bubbles running.
That's what you heard?
Yeah, very similar. I didn't hear the repeating.
Damn you, Brian Eno.
He's stopping the QuickTime video. And then it's come back. So maybe it's the CPU being taxed. But yeah, similar. Mine were extremely loud cracks and pops in the audio. It didn't, you know, I shut it down more quickly than I should have. I should have recorded it. Next time it happens, I will. And mine, that's on my i9 new MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. So we've heard a lot about this. Apple said nothing. We don't know what's going on.
They never say anything. They just investigate it and then they'll put out a fix.
Yeah. The other one is a little more concerning, and it seems that the T2 chips, the Bridge OS, is crashing on some people. I have not experienced this, but Brian Jones has posted, he's a Mac developer, has posted the core dump. And you could see that the cause was Bridge OS 2.4.1. That's the OS that runs the T2 chips in the new MacBook Pros.
No one wants to panic.
But I'm seeing a number of people saying that this is also a common issue.
No. It was hard at first to tell if it was the Bridge OS or if it was the new windowing server, which was also causing crashes for some people in multi-monitor environments. And there might be two separate things. But I mean, like, one of the consequences of some of the more, what's the right word for it, attention-seeking complaints about Apple hardware is that the minute one is solved, everyone goes rushing to find
Let's
the next
find another one.
And they get so much attention. And it's not that the problems aren't real. They're absolutely real. They happen every year with every computer, with every OS. Every time they fix, you know, every time there's a new update, some percentage of people lose Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and some percentage get it back. These are just incredibly complicated products and there are going to be problems and those problems absolutely have to get fixed. And write in your message boards, complain to Apple, do all that. But it's just this constant flow of can we find the next thing and put it, like, trawl the message boards, trawl Apple forums, find anything anyone's complaining about, and throw it in neon lights. That's just it's
see
so
that I'm
deafening.
Not interested in. On the other hand, you know, I one of the reasons I reread it a lot is that's where people go if you know, and some of these people are on their second or third MacBook, and having the same problem again and again. It's got to be something that is unique to their situation because I haven't, as I said, I've only had the crackle problem happen once. I haven't had it happen since. And I haven't ever seen, I don't think I have had any kernel panics. Although I should say my MacBook Pro, maybe this isn't true because almost every morning when I open it up, it says, oh, your Mac crashed overnight. Would you like
every to morning?
Many mornings.
What?
I'll open it up. And it apparently has rebooted. It's running. And it's rebooted.
It's got the error screen.
It asks to be, to send the error message off. I'll save the
and
error.
And conceivably, screen. I mean, it's not doing anything besides power nap and utility.
Right. That's what's going on. Yeah.
That's the hard part, too. And that's what we saw, you know, with the throttling issue is that it's incredibly workload sensitive. So I don't have these problems. If people give me their workloads that are causing them, I'll try to replicate them because I want to see what's going on, but you have so many, it's the butterfly effect. They're so complicated. You have so many people with so many conditions and they have to be met. Right. And then it triggers an edge case.
Right.
And Apple just has to brute force and contact people. And often they'll send diagnostic tools to you or ask you for diagnostic information to try to figure out why it's happening.
You can, I put a link in the show notes, Renee, to that speaker crackling post from Reddit. So it looks like that's something you could duplicate. Run the QuickTime video on that and use that sample and see if you can get it to duplicate. Melbourne schoolboy, 16 years old, broke into Apple's secure computer systems and exfiltrated 90 gigabytes of secure files, accessed customer accounts. Australian police caught him because he put all the stuff he downloaded in a folder on his hard drive called Hacky Hack Hack.
I love that so much.
He also boasted about it on WhatsApp.
It's of course, not a firewall. It's a firewall.
He's a teenager, so he's in Australia is quite civilized, so his name has not been revealed. But I don't, you know.
Hey, Shlomo, let's play global thermonuclear war.
His offending, this is from the Australian Age newspaper, his offending from the age of 16 saw him develop computerized tunnels and online bypassing systems to hide his identity until a raid on his family home uncovered a litany of hacking files and instructions all saved in a folder called Hacky Hack Hack. His client had become so well known in the international hacking community, according to the teen's defense lawyer, that even mentioning the case in detail could expose him to risk. The Crown prosecutor also said Apple itself was very sensitive about publicity. So we don't know a whole lot of stuff. The search warrant, the kid was arrested last year. Two Apple laptops were seized. The serial numbers matched the serial numbers on the devices which accessed the internal systems. So where this is all coming out, I guess, in the case that is being tried, but his arrest was last year. I don't know what more to say about that.
Yeah. If you're going to do this, you know, 16 is a good age, because when you're under 18, you're precocious, and when you're over 18, you're a felon.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I can say that I had this moment when I was like 18 or 19, where I was doing things that were not far removed from what he was doing, and I realized, oh wait a minute, if I could now be tried in as an adult for this, if the judge doesn't agree with me that I was doing a service to these
apparently computers, the teen did tell the police he dreams of working for Apple.
Well,
it's a good way to get attention.
You you got their attention. You could.
It's not unheard of. Now, I'd like your interpretation of this, because this is what The Age wrote. Further analysis found the schoolboy successfully accessed authorized keys as part of his offending. Authorized keys grant login access to users and are said to be extremely secure. Renee, are those the famous keys that Apple keeps under, you know, lock and key? But
evidently not.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's hard to tell because this doesn't seem like it was written by an information security author.
I'd love to see somebody who knows what they're talking about write about this.
And it sounds like he was rooting around in Apple's internal network, not in the customer face. Like, they do mention the word customer, but it sounds like he was getting data from Apple, not... It's hard to tell. Like, did he find out, like, Phil Schiller's password? I don't know.
We don't know.
It's just not detailed enough.
Love to know more. 90 gigabytes.
Yeah. Like, is it all the marketing photos that Craig Federighi complains about at every keynote?
I don't know. I mean, who knows? Right. Apple's being probed in Japan over anti-competitive behavior. Yahoo Japan, which is not the same as Yahoo US, has a game platform. I'm not sure how it works, but it doesn't go through the App Store. And apparently Apple pressured Yahoo to shut that game platform, it's called Game Plus, down. It launched in July 2017. Let's users play games without needing to download apps. Are they web-based? I don't know. Regulators are investigating Yahoo's assertion that it was Apple who said, it would be nice. It would be a shame if anything were to happen to your Games Plus platform. Yahoo told multiple business partners it was forced to cut back because of pressure behind the scenes from Apple.
Well, I'll be interested to see how this, like, for instance, Netflix is talking about now having people order.
That's the second story, right?
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's go right into it.
So Netflix is starting to test the idea of forcing you to a web page to pay for your subscription there, as opposed to buying it through iTunes, obviously to save money, we would assume. But I have to say, as a user, what a pain. I mean, I probably would do it, but I'd be so frustrated because... The whole advantage of having, you know, not having to remember what your passwords are and not having to deal with everything and just being able to click on Bill Me through iTunes is such a it's such a luxury, you know, to have it all in inside of that. And I think Netflix can get away with it. I have to admit, when other people do it now, like if anybody else has it, like if I go, oh, I want to get this app, and then they want me to go to an external and I haven't already built an account with them, I'm like, it's not worth it.
The way they're doing it right now is you already have the app, you already have an account, but your account has lapsed. Oh, no, it says no. I'm sorry, you're right. Until September 30th, in 33 countries, new or lapsed subscribers in select markets across Europe, Latin America, and Asia will get redirected when you're, you know, to the mobile web version to log payment details directly with Netflix. Does Apple even allow that?
Yeah, I mean, Audible does it. You know, Audible is the same thing. You can't. It's frustrating. It's stupid and frustrating because you have to every time you want to order an Audible book, you have to go to the Amazon.
Kindle
website.
Does it too. You can't buy. You know, if you're using the Kindle app on other platforms,
you can buy physical goods from within apps, but you can't buy digital goods from within apps.
Yeah. That's not something that I think we should. It's impractical for us to expect companies to fork over such a huge fee to Apple for essentially nothing. It's not as though Apple brought them the customers. It's not as though these companies don't have the ability to process these payments for themselves. That doesn't mean that they're getting less information and less contact with their customers. I think we have to expect that at some point, these companies that have the ability to say, I don't think people are going to quit Netflix over having to go to our website once a year to renew. And that's not something that we can blame on Netflix. I think that's something we blame on Apple, period.
It's going to be super interesting. I mean, as far as I understand, the original rule was put in place because, you know, in the beginning, in-app purchases couldn't be associated to free apps. And then Apple changed that, but they were afraid that the entire app ecosystem would be removed from the App Store. So basically, Apple pays for free apps and it's subsidized. Now it's ridiculously oversubsidized by paid apps, but paid apps are on the decline. And the thought was that everyone would switch to a free app and then charge in-app services or subscriptions, and there'd basically be no revenue from the App Store. So they put these things in place to make sure that, hey, it's not in your best interest to do that. You still got to have some sort of mechanism to feed the App Store machine. And as premium apps start to go away, that's basically going to be all the App Store revenue. But at the same time, we're seeing Fortnite, which has to be in the App Store on Google, going, wait a minute, we don't have to be in Google Play. We can just get everyone to download us separately. And that creates a whole other set of issues, because maybe you're okay with doing that with Fortnite or Netflix or Amazon, but maybe Rinky Dink other app, it sets off all of your alarm bells. So it's an absolute issue, but it'll be hard to solve. Right.
It's an advantage of monopoly because, I mean, you know, not a true monopoly, but Audible, for instance, I do it because what else am I going to use? You know, like, you know, there's not any other option. But I have to say that if there was a solid good option, just the fact that I have to go out in and out like that, I would probably stop doing that. You know, like I keep the books that I have in Audible on Audible, and then I just move on to something else because it just drives me crazy. You get this, you know, I'm just so used to working in my phone and suddenly not being able to do that. Netflix can do it, but I do think that smaller folks that don't have market domination just can't pull it off. And I, you know, Fortnite, I think, had to do it because they were, that's where they started, and they needed the surge that they got.
What about Apple negotiating? They did reduce to a subscription fee for people with a year or more to 15%. What about Apple negotiating and saying, all right, we understand, maybe just 5%.
I think that's all. The basic problem we have here is it's hard to have two intermediaries. You have the content and then you have the customer. And right now, Apple's in between that, on iOS. Amazon and other companies are in between that on the web and other things. And when you try to force both Apple and Amazon into that narrow, we're going to take a slice off the top from the content producers to give it to the customers, there's not a lot of room, especially because like Amazon wants ludicrous margins. It's not like anybody here is giving away money. They want ludicrous margins as well. And it's about them figuring out how much of those ludicrous margins they're each going to take. But I think absolutely they should work out those deals. It'd be better for everybody.
Of net neutrality. It's rent taking in a way, right? Because Apple owns the customer, and so they
can put up a toll booth. Retail was 55%, right?
Yeah.
Like if you ever wanted to sell in retail, it was 55% to the store.
That's right.
Right. We don't talk about like shelving costs, so to speak, that they pay to actually just have content on the shelves of a store. But I think this is going to become just a bigger and a bigger problem as individual, like the EU and also individual nations start to pass their own rules about antitrust and digital content as separate issues, they'll start to get a finer comb about what are companies entitled to do with the lack of choice that they're offering their users, and what oversteps the bounds. Or like the EU is famously some of these laws are business oriented, basically to protect markets. Some of them are consumer oriented to protect consumers, and the consumer oriented ones could easily say, okay, you have a monopoly on apps that are sold through the App Store. You can no longer operate in our country and not give people an alternative to, or even not give developers an alternative to giving you a 30% cut of everything that they sell digitally. So this could become a problem as the years go by.
I think it's going to constantly be complicated because the Android market is so much bigger than the iOS market. It's hard to sell the
by numbers,
monopoly
but not so by money. But also remember, the only reason why Fortnite's doing that is because Android has that capability. You can drill into settings, flip a switch, and run unsigned software. That's a feature of Android. Whereas they're not going to on Apple, they're not going to ask people to, here is instructions for jailbreaking.
Right, but the precedent becomes problematic because it is the Android market is so much bigger than the iOS market from a pure size perspective, regardless of the cache perspective. And so, you know, the precedent becomes complicated because now it's saying that you don't have control of your own store, and that maybe we can say that that's reasonable for Apple, but if you try to apply that to other businesses that do want to have that control, and there's a huge business model that I don't think is being expressed right now that other companies should be doing, which is their software should be a platform for a marketplace that they control. You know, and it's, you know, we're using it in phones, but you know, I've always thought that like Final Cut should, all the plugins and all the training you can buy and everything else should be built into the app. You just pull down and order it. You know, and those kinds of things, you know, haven't been, I think people haven't taken full advantage of being able to incorporate that. But you're basically, if you extrapolate what we're talking about for Apple, it would affect those kinds of marketplaces as well.
Another big problem for Netflix and other streaming services, Hulu, Amazon, HBO, password sharing. In the past, Reed Hastings, CEO of Netflix and HBO's CEO, have said, we know there's password sharing going on, but it's not a big deal. A recent study by media research firm Magid said 35% of millennials share passwords for streaming services, compared to 19% for Gen X and 13% for baby boomers. And the CNBC article actually makes a good point. I bet a lot of millennials, like my kids, are still on dad's mobile phone plan.
Well, there is a plan. I mean, there is a plan to do a family plan. I mean, yeah, everybody's got their own little names and Netflix.
Yeah,
and I'm assuming this is
and
more
my
than
health
that.
Insurance. And but right. Yeah, it's a big difference. CNBC interviewed some interesting people. One 20-something Twitter user told CNBC she consistently signed in with the HBO Go login of a one-night stand she met 5 years ago because he saved his credentials on her browser. Gives a new meaning to Netflix and chill. A CNBC coworker said she continued to use the Netflix password of a guy she'd been dating even after he added a user profile to his account for the new woman in his life. Another person who asked for anonymity told CNBC she stopped using credentials her boyfriend gave her after finding out they belonged to someone the boyfriend knew in high school who had since passed away. So don't use. What are you going to do? Industry leaders profess no concern. But I think this is 35% more than Apple's taken.
There is the makings of one hell of a screwball comedy based on, wait a minute, you mean that the ID that I've been using was not just yours, but also your former lover's? And she's been learning about the Korean boy band videos that I've been watching? That's,
I guarantee you why Netflix says, well, who's watching? And they have the different family members.
Right.
That's got to be one of the ways that they fight this.
There could be. There's a whole romantic comedy in there, like a You Got Mail kind of thing, where they meet each other because they were both
sharing a third-party path.
Yeah, exactly.
Why, you like the same movies I do.
Right.
Exactly. And you like the same movies I do.
Let's watch them together.
It'll be like an updated version of Green Card with Gerard Depardieu, where like they're being sued now. And they have to pretend to be a household. They have to move in together for a month just to demonstrate that no, we are a household. And then
here's a liar.
Damn it, why am I giving these ideas away for free?
I know. We just gave a whole script, movie. You could put this on Netflix about Netflix. It would. Yeah, there's a whole like circle there.
This is a article from last December that Liar Lemon in our chat room just passed along. The UK's data privacy regulator has cautioned members of parliament about sharing work computer passwords. Apparently, this follows tweets by three Conservative Party MPs over the weekend claiming they'd provided staff with their access to their login details. That's probably more to explain the weird tweets, right? Nick Bowles says, I share my password. I often forget my password and have to ask my staff what it is. Anyway, don't share passwords. It's a security danger.
And do you think that we'll ever be in a world in which we don't have to remind people that I know it's inconvenient that we lock the outside door to like the secure area, but don't like stick a chair between the door and the door jamb because you don't want to be bothered with the key. And can we just, well, I think, that, I mean, it's that bold to be able to just say, oh, sure, have my passwords. That's fine.
I think that we are 2 years away from every Apple device having some version of biometric. And I think that they're slowly adding it to everything. And I think that that'll be part of that. You know, Google now is providing their hardware, you know, externalized. But I think the biometric is the answer to a lot of those things, which is that, you know, eventually we're not going to be able to log into anything without biometric, just because that's the way that you solve a lot of this. And especially as you start to move towards things like online voting, which West Virginia is going to be experimenting with, that's going to be, it's going to happen. I mean, it's not, we can talk about whether it should happen or not happen, but within the next 10 years, there'll be whole states that are doing, online voting.
And that's the year Vladimir Putin becomes president of the United States. Lunch at Apple Park, says Tim Cook, just got a lot more exciting. We knew this was a feature of the Apple Park campus. Those giant windows.
Watching those pod bay doors open.
Can be slid open. How many? There may be 3 or 4 story tall glass windows on the Apple Cafe.
Is that where the shuttlecraft come out once the donut goes into orbit?
Yeah, what are the other uses for that? Blimp hanger?
All I can say is they have trees in there.
There's trees
inside.
That's
one way to keep employees
inside.
From walking into the windows.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
The only thing I thought of immediately was that scene in the James Bond movie Octopussy, where there's a big chase and he's in this microjet and he buzzes all the way through the two open doors of a hangar. And someone is hope. I would like to think that the Apple that I fell in love with as a kid, if someone asked for permission to try that stunt and got clearance, and everyone, so there was a memo saying everyone stay out of this area because someone's going to try to buzz an actual airplane through, I would like to think they'd at least consider it.
Do you think Tim shot this GIF himself? Like, just went out there with his iPhone and said, "Okay, everybody, just pretend I'm not here."
Yeah, no.
Or Serenity grabbed his camera and shot it for him.
Yeah, yeah. We don't. Serenity's not doing Tim Cook's social media, is he?
We can't see her in there, though.
No.
Not unless Tim Cook is smart.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Get Tim on roller skates.
Oh my God. I just thought that I didn't think of this before, but I now think there's at least a 55% chance that Apple Campus will have its own like roller derby league.
Awesome.
Within a year. I know that she's going to, she would add it to like the ad hoc, like fitness clubs. And then there's going to be the next buzz over drone footage is going to be of just a weird oval.
There should be a track all the way around.
Well, banked oval being installed somewhere on spaceship.
Yeah.
And then you could have Bluetooth LE with accelerometers and, a lot of things. You could add a lot of extra data.
The Bondi Blue iMac, 20 years old this week. Yep. Great rundown of pictures from Ars Technica and reviews. And here's Steve Jobs introducing the new Blue iMac.
It's been 10 months since a new management team took over at Apple.
This was one of his first things, wasn't it?
Really, yep. You can see a lot of cars in the parking lots and nights and the weekends.
So formal.
And because of their hard work,
he's wearing a
really
jacket
to
and a
to you today that Apple's
collared shirt.
And
let me find the reveal here.
Not much better. And so when we run these ads, they're very effective in our testing.
Oh, he's talking about the Switch ads, right? I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. Is that what he's talking about?
It's a different one.
And they're effective because they're true.
I miss Steve's reveals.
A totally new PowerBook G3. This thing has been redesigned from the processor to the keycaps.
Look at that.
And it is going to set the new gold standard for portables out there. It is hot.
But he also announced a new desktop computer.
And we noticed some things about them pretty much universally. The first is they're really slow. They're very slow. They're all using last year's processor. Very, very slow. Second is they've all got pretty crummy displays on them.
He's talking
They're
about
generally
you know,
13
those beige
inch,
box PCs.
And the quality of them is very poor. Apple
designs
all its own displays,
you could
so we're used to something much better.
Add features to later.
These are pretty bad.
Yeah.
Likely no networking on them. Some have it, most don't. Old generation I.O. devices. And what that means is they're lower performance.
Floppy disks.
What that means is I.O. that everybody uses for the peripherals they already
ugly.
Own.
Ugly.
Ugly.
So,
ugly.
It's Excuse me. I put WBCN stickers on my tower PC, and it looked awesome.
What's under that? What's under that cloth over there?
To put in a G3 processor running at 233 megahertz.
Ooh.
We debated this quite a bit because there were cheaper, slower things we could have used, and we said, no, this has got to be the computer that we want on our desk too. A G3 running at 233, and we didn't forget the cache. It's got a half a megabyte L2 backside cache, and if this thing's...
Holy cats! Did he say half a megabyte?
On displays, we said, what is the largest display that you'd ever want in one of these consumer
computers? What is the largest you could ever want?
And the answer to us was a 15-inch display.
Whoa!
1024 by 768.
1024 by 760.
Stand back.
In every product.
This is what it was like 20 years ago, kids.
Display engineers, engineers.
Dark ages.
He was so excited he didn't even have time to put a tie on.
We are very proud of. He briefly flirted with his Canadian.
Let's go ahead and put a lot of memory in this thing. 32 megabytes standard. It's expandable to 128.
Actually, that was a big
4 gigabyte disk drive, 24x CD-ROM.
4 gigabyte disk drive.
And let's build in a lot of communications. This thing's got 100 megabit Ethernet as standard. Now, why? Because a lot of our education customers want to put these high-speed networks in, and because we're seeing it in homes. Approximately 10% of the homes in Silicon Valley now have Class 5 wiring in them. We're starting to see lots of home networks emerging. A fast modem and also 4 megabit infrared built in. You want to beam your digital photographs in from your digital camera.
Did we ever do that?
Into every product.
Did that ever happen?
The new generation of I.O. 12 megabit universal serial bus, two ports. We're leaving the old Apple I.O. behind. Stereo surround sound built into every product, and a great keyboard and mouse.
A great keyboard.
Yes. Now,
this is what they look like today. And I would like to take the privilege of showing you what they're going to look like from today on.
There he is, ready to unveil.
Is iMac.
Oh, pretty. Bondi Blue. All right, we don't have to watch the rest. Ars Technica, though, has the entire video, which is awesome. Some of the ads, too, say hello to iMac, the three steps to set up the iMac.
Presenting three easy steps to the internet.
Jeff Goldblum.
Step one. Plug in.
Nice that that plug has an Ethernet port. By the way,
get connected.
I guess it's a phone jack.
Step three. There's no step three. There's no step three.
Well, kind of is if you want the keyboard and mouse to work, but we won't mention that.
True.
And then, which is kind of fun, ours has its reviews over the last 20 years. So that's fun. Happy birthday, 20 years old. The iMac. And that still is being made. Doesn't look quite the same. All right, let's take a break. Come back with your picks of the week. And I think we should get some plates and forks because I think we should have cake.
Getting my plate and fork right now, LeBron.
Yes, no. I'm going to push it in your face. Push it in your face. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. All right. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. This is probably the very first program I install whenever I get a new device. As soon as I get the browser up and running, I download LastPass, install it. It is how we secure all of the passwords. I secure all the passwords on my phone, iPhone, Android, my Windows PC, my Macintosh, of course. What about your business? We're talking about password sharing. 32%, according to one survey, 32% of employees share passwords with others. Sure they do. The rest have them on post-it notes on the screen. You got to think about that when it comes to your business. Those MPs should probably have been using LastPass. LastPass Enterprise. It makes password sharing more convenient for employees, but keeping access to corporate data secure. And you completely control access. Employees can share passwords without actually sharing the password. They don't have access to change it if you set it up that way. You could set master password requirements. You can enable password resets and control that completely. We use LastPass Enterprise here, and if somebody forgets their password, they don't just, reset it. They have to go to Russell, our IT guy, and get it reset. You get over 100 policies, security reports, shared folders, organize logins for everything, including not just websites, but databases, SSH keys, software licenses. our QuickBooks, believe me, that's the keys to the kingdom, right? We're not going to just let anybody have the password to our bookkeeping accounts. But LastPass makes it safe and easy for us to give employees access to revoke it when we need to. It's really powerful. And we also require multi-factor authentication. With the LastPass Authenticator app, a verification button pops up on an employee's phone to guarantee they're the only ones with access to their account. So you get your choice of multi-factor. I use YubiKeys for my personal LastPass. Even if credentials are not compromised through phishing attacks or malware, when you use a second factor like this, you don't risk your passwords. The LastPass password generator solves another big problem at home and at business where people just reuse the same password over and over again. The generator makes it easy to create unique random passwords, and you don't have to remember them. LastPass does. And if you're a Microsoft house, you'll love this. Employees can now log into their LastPass accounts with their Microsoft AD credentials. So now, really, you only have one password to remember, your Active Directory password, and that's it. Data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level. Data stored in the vault is private and safe, even from LastPass. They can't access it either. And for easy onboarding to password autofill, LastPass makes it easy for businesses to take control of passwords and reduce the threat of breach. We use it. In fact, we love LastPass so much, it's an employee benefit. Every employee also gets a personal account. You could choose from LastPass Premium. That's your personal account. LastPass Families for your entire family, and LastPass Teams for smaller teams of 50 or fewer, or what we use, LastPass Enterprise. Speaking of anniversaries, LastPass celebrated its 10th anniversary last month. Happy anniversary, LastPass. More than 13 million people trust LastPass, 33,000 businesses. It's the number one most preferred password manager, and it is literally the first thing I install on every device. You ought to have LastPass, not just for you, but to protect your business too. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. Let's get our picks of the week. Alex, you got a pick for us today?
I do. This one's actually a link to a friend of mine in LinkedIn. Probably one of the most talented artists I know. His name's Coley Wirtz. He actually is a concept artist at Lucasfilm. And it was funny, there was these pieces of paper from an instructor that he had probably in 95 or 6, and it was like how to build certain kinds of blends in Form Z a long time ago. And I remember that was like the holy Bible of how to do all this. So I got that from Coley, but he just kept on going. I got good enough. He is just an amazing natural artist that's also super technical. And the reason I'm recommending it here is he does a lot of this on his iPhone and his iPad with his finger.
What?
So when you'll see like finger painting with Procreate. I think he uses Procreate a lot. But so when you look at a lot of these, a lot of them are being done with his. There you can see some time lapses there where he's doing a lot of this finger painting in Procreate on his iPad. And so if you don't think you can do you can do art on your iPad, you should just watch this for just a little bit.
This is weird. The only place he shares it is LinkedIn.
He seems to. I don't know where else he puts it, but he every day or two he. Wow. It's worth following him on LinkedIn.
Oh, look, you can watch him draw.
Yeah, he's you're just watching like an artist actually like work his way through drawing something that is amazing. So if you want to see what a Star Wars artist, you know, what you have to be able to do if you're a concept artist at Lucasfilm, this is a good sense. But he's one of the best I've ever seen. So especially for what we call hard surface stuff.
If you don't have a LinkedIn account, you can create one for free. I should mention LinkedIn is a sponsor, but that's not why you mentioned it. Yeah. CEO, and then once you
Coley Wirtz, I guess they posted in here. He has his own website too, so you can look at it there. But just remember that I see it on LinkedIn when it goes by. So, but yeah, Instagram Coley Wirtz, and then coleywirtz.com. And but you should I follow him just to see what I'm going to be in, how I'm going to feel like. Oh, I can't do that.
But the next Star Wars movie might have in it.
Well, it won't have anything. So this is all his own. Like, just this isn't Star Wars stuff. This is Coley's like what he just
he posts this on Instagram too.
This is what he does at lunch.
Here's another
like
way.
C
O L I E W E R T Z. Might be easier just to get this on Instagram. Look at these. Wow.
And just
he does this at lunch.
Yeah, this is like what he does at lunch and when he's like waiting for a doctor's appointment.
this is though. That's the key to being a great artist, right? Is just continually draw.
Yeah.
Just practice all the time.
Yeah. And it's just.
This is on an iPhone.
Yeah.
Procreate on an iPhone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe he'd want a pencil for the iPhone.
He does so much with his finger, but I think that he definitely, he's had a couple posts where he was talking about using the pencil and that he, you know.
Here's one he did on a whiteboard while on hold with insurance company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So I have two quick picks for this week. The first one is the Celebi Quest Leo is now available as of yesterday in Pokemon
what?
Go.
What? What?
So you can get the mythical Pokemon Celebi, but you've got to do a whole bunch of different tasks to unlock it. So I'm busy posting a guide to all the tasks. I think in that article, it's up to 4, should be up to 6 in an hour or so because people are discovering the new tasks as we speak. So if you want to cheat, not really a cheat sheet, but if you want to get through it as fast as possible, I have all the information you need to do it.
I can't just do it sitting here in my chair.
No, you got to do certain things. Some of it's slow. Like you've got to catch a Pokemon every day for 3 days, which I think is Niantic's way of stopping spoofers from just getting it in the first 2 hours of release.
Yeah.
But there's a few things in there.
So will it show up at some point in my...
should be there. Like when you launch the game, it'll be on the right where you do your tasks. You'll see Professor Willow will pop up with a Ripple in Time quest for you.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I'll just run into these.
It'll tell you to do certain things like walk an Eevee for 10 kilometers and then evolve it at night to get an Umbreon and all those sorts of things.
Oh, man. I've done a few of those things.
Yes. So it's all there for anybody who wants it.
We're talking Pokemon Go, kids, just so you know.
The second one is not Pokemon related. The second one is they announced 2 new Hue lights. And I'm a huge fan of Hue and Hue lighting. And I have, I think, every existing kind of Hue light imaginable. So they went ahead and made a couple of new kinds. They're both sort of ambiance lighting, and they're meant for sort of your TV setup. So you can put 2 of the standing lights on the floor on the desk and shine them against the wall, and they'll just do that nice back effect.
This is what I do with those dome-shaped hues right now.
Yeah, I have a Hue, I forget what they're called, the previous generation ambiance. Yeah. They are like little bowl things, and some people use the strips for this. So you can get sort of dedicated lights, and they also have horizontal ones that you can sort of put on the ground or put behind your television if you don't want the lightsabers.
They look like lightsabers, yeah.
Yeah, they're two. Yeah, the 2 standing ones are lightsabers. The 2 bottom ones, I guess, are, I don't know, landmines, something. Wow. I don't know. But they'll be available, I think, October, they said, end of October. But they might be available for pre-order either, and I'm definitely going to get a few sets of these and just put
these
them around.
These look really cool.
Yeah.
Good for them. This is great. Andy Inako, have you a pick?
Actually, a tip. I got a tweet from somebody who showed me a picture of their Apple Watch with the screen popped off.
Yikes.
And asked, what could be causing this or something? How do I approach Apple about my now very sad Series 0 watch? The face just delaminated while I was driving today, but hadn't delaminated. Clearly, the entire screen had just... boing, like popped off cartoon like, and it looks very much as though the battery swelled up and caused this thing to pop off. So just a reminder that Apple extended the warranty of Apple Watches by another 2 years, I think, for swollen battery issues. So if anything like this happens to you, like the screen pops off or the screen breaks, but you don't know why, or there seems to be now a gap in the case somewhere, definitely take it back to the Apple store because it's possible that they will fix it or replace it for free. Because again, you don't know it, but your watch is still under warranty. That is also a really good piece of advice for pretty much any swollen battery issue for any device, because Apple is very, 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 very well motivated to make sure that any lithium polymer batteries that are swelling, to get them into a bucket of sand and out of the customer's hands as quickly as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So they won't necessarily replace every single device, no matter what it is, but it's very, very good idea to see what they'll do for you, and also to make sure that you don't have a damaged battery and something that's going to cause an even larger problem. But in the case of these watches, a lot of people don't know it, but your watches are still under warranty because of this warranty extension.
Good news. Thank you for that tip, Andy. And I want to mention, because I throw boys in the chat room, and he will be mad at me if I don't, The new iconic pillow collection by Throwboy is available on Kickstarter, and it's a doozy. He starts with the 1977 Apple II, the 1984 Macintosh, the 1998 Bondi Blue iMac, the original 2001 iPod, and the 2007 original iPhone. These are fairly big pillows. Yeah. That'd be nice. And you can get them all or get one. But they are on Kickstarter right now. And he has, by the way, already exceeded his goal of $10,000 by a little bit. So it's not like he's hurting. They'll definitely be made. I'll put it that way.
You know, one of the coolest things I saw... One of the coolest things I saw for sale at that Comic-Con a couple weeks ago.
What?
A full body pillow with the full body image of Ron Swanson on it.
Oh, Ron. You complete me.
just as a handyman, I think I would like to have for moral support as I'm once again, I'm pretty sure I've turned off the water to this fixture before wrenching it, but we'll find out after another couple of turns, won't we?
Let's see what Ron says. Wow. We're out of show, but not out of great hosts. Thank you, Andy Iannacco from WGBH in Boston and Iannacco.com, Iannacko. Anything you want to mention?
Nope. Got nothing going on right now, but again, hopefully sometime soon.
Excellent. Alex Lindsay, you'll find him on the Twitter, AlexLindsay. What does Alex Lind say on the Twitter? Anything you want to plug?
Nope.
Come on, Renee. Surely there's something you got to plug.
I put up a video with my complete Apple event preview. So everything that I think we're going to see and maybe some things I think we won't going to see. We aren't going to see it. It's up on in the YouTube, the Vector channel on YouTube.
Excellent. Or go to imore.com/Vector.
Yes, sir.
That's where Renee hangs his hat. I should mention I have something to plug. On Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC, we're going to continue our Apple Creators series. We had two with Sal Segoyan last week and the week before. This week on Triangulation, it's the return of Bill Atkinson. And he's going to bring toys.
Oh.
The following week, Ken Kashenda will be on, who wrote that great book that you love, Renee, so much.
He's amazing.
Yeah. He was an iPhone designer, worked on the iPhone team, and he's written a book about Apple. Which comes out later in September, I think September 14th. Maybe he knows something about the ship date of the iPhone. Anyway.
He's out, Leo.
His interview was recorded last week with Megan Maroney. Will be a week from Friday. But this Friday, Bill Atkinson, in the interview, Ken mentions that he on launch day of the original iPhone, he met Bill Atkinson in line waiting at probably the Palo Alto store. And Bill had carved a prototype of the iPhone, so he'd have rough size, and he's going to bring the carved prototype.
Nice.
And a whole lot more toys, including a General Magic prototype, plus the General Magic mission statement, which he wrote. We're going to have a great time talking about all sorts of stuff.
That sounds great.
Friday on Triangulation, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. We do this show every Tuesday right after iOS Today, around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. 1800 UTC. Love it if you'd stop by. We had a great studio audience today. Thank you all for joining us, bringing Jersey Fudge and more. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. And today, y'all get cake. Yay. Good timing. If you can't be here in studio, you can watch us do it live, too, on the web at twit.tv/live. And if you do that, you probably should join the chat room. There's a bunch of other people also watching live. And you can chat with them at irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of every show available at our website, twit.tv. In the case of this show, it's twit.tv/mbw. And you can also subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get it the minute it's available Tuesday afternoon. Pocket Casts, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Slacker, SoundCloud, TuneIn. It's all anything that you use. It's there. Promise you, Pocket Casts. Just subscribe, that way you'll have every episode. Thanks for being here, but now I'm sad to say it's time to get back to work, because cake time is over.
Oh.
No? Oh, it's just beginning. All right, everybody's coming in for cake.